This is day two of the 2009 Ottawa Bible School. Our second period teacher is Brother Matt Norton. His general topic is the life of Lot. Today's topic is contentment. Brother Matt.
Thanks, Brother Dave. I feel a little that way myself this morning, brothers and sisters. How are we all? Yeah, well, I'm feeling a little ordinary this morning. So we're going to do this class the second time if it doesn't work out the first. All right then. Now, what did we look at yesterday? Anybody remember anything that we talked about yesterday? It was about 24 hours back. I just need my memory jogged a little bit. Okay, making the right choices. I guess that is it in a nutshell. We're still going on with that. If I were to ask you today, what was Lot's second biggest problem? Bizarre question, isn't it? I can't hear anything. You're definitely on the right track there. As normal, the speaker wants the exact word to give the lolly out. What's the opposite to contentment? Okay, so Lot's second biggest problem, I believe, was just this. Was covetousness. And by the way, you might think I'm being a little bit harsh on Lot, but remember, I don't want to be harsh on Lot because I'm being harsh on myself. I am Lot and he is me. Brothers and sisters, that's scripturally provable, and we'll look at that in maybe one or two days. But if you just want to make a note of it, Hebrews 13 verse 5 is, in that section there, not as well known, an exposition on the attitudes and the life of Lot and Abraham. But we'll look at that, you know, as the week goes on. But Lot's second biggest problem, I believe, was covetousness. Abraham and Lot both had riches, didn't they? But Abraham wasn't in love with it, like Lot was. So I'm not having a go at any brother and sister here in America, as I wouldn't in Australia, just because you have a nice house, big car. It doesn't matter. Abraham had more money than Lot ever had, but Lot loved it, and he couldn't live without it, whereas Abraham could have lived with a tent and a goat. But Lot was different. He was in love with what he had. Now, just have a look at 2 Peter. I just want to show you this, please, brothers and sisters. As we think about Lot, is it Lot by name, Lot by nature? In 2 Peter, we're told this. And you might notice, it's interesting, you can follow this through. Who is Lot often paired with in the Bible? Noah. It's interesting to look at that. We haven't got time to do it, but it's interesting. Lot and Noah are compared, but just look at this here. 2 Peter chapter 2, we're told in verse 6 that God was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. In verse 7, he delivered just Lot. It doesn't mean only Lot, it means righteous Lot. Vexed with the filthy way of life of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with her unlawful deeds. Now, we mentioned yesterday, I believe that Lot, who was in acute mental distress, brothers and sisters, wasn't the Lot of chapter 13 who pitched his tent towards Sodom. I don't believe when he woke up every morning and looked at Sodom, at that time he was thinking, oh, it's terrible the way they live. That's not the Lot, I believe, of 2 Peter 2 in acute mental distress. And I don't believe it's the Lot of chapter 14 when Abraham saves him out of the hands of Chedorlaomer. And Lot waves goodbye to Uncle Abraham and goes back down into the city of Sodom. I believe the Lot of 2 Peter 2, who was eaten out every day with all the wicked deeds of the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, was the Lot of chapter 19 of Genesis. The one who sat now in the gate, the one who was sitting there, I believe, waiting for the salvation of God. Right at the end, this is that Lot. And I've got to ask you the question, did Abraham have that same mental distress that Lot had in Sodom? Did he? Okay, why not? Okay, he wasn't in Sodom. Why wasn't Abraham in Sodom? I mean, this is just so basic. This is just 101. It's because he chose not to be. Abraham didn't go there. Abraham wasn't covetous. He didn't feel that he needed more. He was satisfied with what God had given him. And so this morning what we want to do is talk a little bit about contentment, brothers and sisters, okay? And I want to talk about it in terms of society at large and how it relates to us, because I'm suggesting this morning, from my experience in Australia with my brothers and sisters and myself there, and I'm expounding myself often in this, mostly in this, that the world in its fierce, inextinguishable discontent is encroaching on us in the truth. And I believe that. So what we want to do today is have a look at that. Be content is in the Bible. Did you know that... this is funny. I should just show you this. I don't know how they get these studies, but they actually say to us that we only use 20% of what we own. Therefore, you could go home and get rid of 80% of what you have in your house and still get by. I've got two questions about that. Like, one, where do they get these numbers from? And two, how do they get into my house? Like, it's bizarre, isn't it, brothers and sisters? 20%. And I look around, I can hardly get through the door when I get home from work sometimes. Kids' toys and things everywhere. And yet, they couldn't live without them, the poor souls. Now, contentment, brothers and sisters, is something that we need to think about. There you go. Paul in Philippians chapter 4, in chains, in jail, brothers and sisters. He tells us that he's learnt the secret of contentment. He knew how to be content in want and in plenty. We've got to learn that secret of contentment. It's recommended to us in 2 Peter 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And it's also commanded in Hebrews 13, verse 5. It's commanded of us to be content. Now, contentment, being content, Thayer suggests, is being content with what? Well, the sufficiency of the necessities of life. Now, think about that. The sufficiency of the necessities of life. Now, what that means is just having enough food and raiment. Be content. And discontentment is when those things aren't enough. Now, we know you don't have to have a lot to be discontent, do you? You can have all the world and still be discontent. And you can have nothing and be discontent. It's a choice we make. And contentment is the freedom that comes, brothers and sisters, when poverty and riches don't matter anymore. You can live with either and you can live without. And you know the thing is, we think that, and I think your grandparents would have thought, that advances in technology and entertainment and knowledge would have brought a measure of contentment in this world, wouldn't it? And you know what? We'd be wrong. As we said before, this world is marked with inextinguishable discontent. On every side, society calls the age in which we live the age of envy. The age of envy, brothers and sisters. And, you know, that indictment, it doesn't make me feel bad. I just, oh, yeah, that's right. And I go and check my bank balance via the internet. How come I don't feel bad over that? And in some measure, by the way, more technology and more knowledge in society has brought better things. I mean, because I read those old fairy tales and you see those hunchback old hags with no teeth and warts, living lonely, you know, in a forest. And I think, man, people used to look like that when they had no doctors and no phones and no hospitals and things. But it's much better now. But we're no better off because we might be cleaner and more attractive to just sad people. We hide it all. Something in here is lacking still inside us. And I believe Lot had this problem really bad. And brothers and sisters, we've got this problem. I believe we've got this problem. Now, as we know, there's many avenues for personal contentment out in society, isn't there? What sort of avenues? Like, it's a veritable choose-your-own-adventure out there. And it depends upon what personality you actually are as to what you choose to get for yourself contentment. And if I asked you, just tell me, what sort of ways or means or vehicles would people use to gain for themselves a measure of satisfaction and fulfillment in this life. Can anybody give me any ideas? So you're going to have to yell, I'm hopeless. Okay, yeah, great holidays. Cars? Music, exactly, yeah. You'd be a real muso. Sport, what about, you know, fit, healthy bodies, beautiful spouses, prestigious educations, things like that. It doesn't, like, you might, you know, you sniff at some of them, but you'll choose whatever your personality type likes. We're all in there. The world will, it's got so many avenues to get contentment, and yet people are coming up today and they're not content at all. And the Bible tells us, it's so simple, godliness with contentment is great gain. But between Paul's teaching and our lifestyle application, somehow fog has rolled in. I'll tell you a story. When I was younger, we went to a birthday party, not in the truth either, which is really, this is teaching me something, before I even came to the truth. I think we were about 10 years old. I went to my friend's birthday party, and we're all standing around. It was just at lunchtime, and all the, we had our plates of food there, and Damien was opening up all these presents, opening them all up, chucking the paper everywhere, you know, as a little spoiled kid does. And I remember him looking up after opening his presents and with a sneer saying to his parents, is this all I get? And we all sat back. His dad just marches straight over, gets his bolognese, tips it over his head, sends us all home, packs up his presents, puts him in his room and takes his presents down to Vinny's. It's a thrift store or something, whatever you call it here. No birthday. Nothing. You know, it's amazing because I learned something there. It's just disgusting behavior. But how often are we like that? Because God says godlikeness, godliness with contentment. See, God's the Father who's given us all a gift. We open up the present. We're so excited. We take the bow off. We rip all the, you know, hardly read the card. Open it up and we open it up and look inside. And what's in there? It's God. God has given himself to us as a present, as a gift. And how often do we, in our unconsciously or consciously in our minds, look up and say, is this all I get? Is this it? Is this what the truth's got for me? And we feel like we're missing out, brothers and sisters. Like, I feel disgusted with myself when I think about that. So I'm not criticizing Lot. Who, here I am in Australia, we live in beautiful houses, brick and tile. And I'm saying we should be content. And we snuggle up next to Lot and we say, this is your big problem. Who would want to live in a tent all their life? Has anyone been tenting with their family? I've got 5 kids. I don't like camping. I've got scarred men. I'm scarred from childhood because of what my father put me through setting up a tent. I just can't do it anymore. So I'm here criticizing Lot. I don't think so. This is hard for us to take, brothers and sisters. But as we said, contentment outside of the Bible is like a relative state. And I'm sure, brothers and sisters, you would all understand this. It's influenced by our culture and our peers and what our friends and family all have. And if we took everything we had today, imagine if you could just zap ourselves, everything we've got, back to the early years of AD 70 or AD, you know, early years. We'd be feeling pretty content if we looked around at what we had and what everybody else had, wouldn't we? And that's for a good reason, because this feeling of satisfaction that we now have rests on the difference between all that there is to have and all that we do have. And the closer we get to that, the more feeling of satisfaction we think we'll get. But the problem, what happens with this point here? It's got no ceiling on it. It just keeps going up and up and up and up and up if you're watching it. And that's what happens. And I remember as a kid, like before the days, I was looking at the photos up there in Idlewild of times past, how exciting it would be. All the older brothers and sisters back from, what was the earliest sort of times you guys had this camp? 55. Back then, there was no such thing as air conditioning in cars. There were probably brothers and sisters who didn't come to Idlewild Bible School simply because the air conditioning in their cars broken down this time. I'm not going without air conditioning. Like, before air conditioning, nobody had it, so we weren't discontented. And I remember as kids, there was me, Mal and Andrew, 3 brothers, all with sweaty, slippery little legs, sliding backwards and forwards in the vinyl seats at the back of Mum and Dad's car. The windows roll down, furnace air blasting out of the console at us, and we're fighting because we don't like each other like brothers do, but none of us were discontented until one day, because everybody else was doing it, by the way, but one day, past us came this car with all the windows rolled up, frost on the windows, all the occupants sitting in there chattering, dressed in fur coats. And I had this yucky feeling. And I said, "Mum, what's that?" And she said, "Son, that's discontentment." And all of a sudden, the set point of what there is to have has gone up. And it really affects us, brothers and sisters. And you can tell heaps of stories about iPods. I bought a 30, I haven't got time, I shouldn't be telling you these stories, but a 30 gig iPod. I feel a measure, first of all, of contentment. I walk out the door, in walks my friend, he's getting an 80 gig iPod. I hate him. But we're made up because we're friends now, because we're both looking forward to the 160 gig iPod you can get. It's true, isn't it? It just keeps going up and up. And who in the world today, even the most retro trend-setting couple, has a black and white TV? Like, nobody does. But in the 60s, if you had a black and white TV, everyone would be happy they even had one. But by the early 70s, like, you'd be feeling pretty discontented. Mum and Dad had a black and white telly if it wasn't in colour. It's really bad how it works on us, brothers and sisters. And so a good metaphor is the prosperity ladder. Everyone's climbing the prosperity ladder, isn't it? And the problem is when we look up the ladder, those on the rung above us, we look at what they have and what I haven't got. And it strikes a near fatal blow at my contentment. What we should be doing, brothers and sisters, is spending a little time looking down the ladder. Has anybody ever done mission work? Yeah? Philippines? Anyone been to the Philippines? That's good. I've spent some time in the Philippines and looking down the ladder, and it's very helpful, brothers and sisters. But you go there. Now, get this. This is what happens. You go to the Philippines, and you talk to the brothers and sisters there, and they look at me high up the rung. I am a king, just showering money out. It's not like that in Western society. We're trying to get by. But that's how they sit. They've got their TVs, and they watch American programs, by the way, in the Philippines, and they all believe that you guys are all sitting around in cafes drinking coffee with one another, having a great life. You don't have to work. None of your kids go to school. Life's perfect. That's what they believe. They're taught that. They imbibe it, just like a sponge. And I go to them, I say, "Brothers and sisters, you've got to be content." And you can see it in their eyes, brothers and sisters. Who am I? Who are you to tell me, you king sitting high up there, that I should be content? And you try and compare it with them, to them. You say, no, look, brothers and sisters, I've been to Tonga as well. We spent 3 months there with my family. And it's helpful for the kids, by the way. I tell my kids, be grateful, be content. They go, "Yeah, Dad." Hand out. But you take them and put them in a place like that. You don't have to say a word. They can see it. In Tonga, brothers and sisters, they have a lot less than the brothers and sisters in the Philippines, believe it or not. And so I try and tell the Filipino brothers and sisters this. And they don't want to hear it. They don't want to know. They don't want any arguments. Discontent is not only a sin that is in the Western cultures in which you and I live. It is everywhere, brothers and sisters. So you don't have to have all the lurks and perks to be a discontented person. We've got to work on it, and this is Lot's problem. Now, we think about it. When Christ preached contentment, he had one change of clothes, he had no house, no savings, and he trusted in God, and it actually worked. It worked, brothers and sisters, and people believed in him. He gave them hope. We've got to believe too. Sometimes the only hope that we give to people down the ladder is that one day they might be fortunate enough to be like us. And it's really sad because, you know, thousands of people around the world tonight are going to go to bed hungry who aren't even going to wake up in the morning. And we've got to somehow think of these things, I believe. Now, this is Lot's problem. Now, I did a bit of work for you too, brothers and sisters, on America, believe it or not. Have a guess, because what hurts us is the advertising industry. I don't know if any of you are in it, but just take a wild stab in the dark. How much money do you think the advertising industry in America spends every year to deliberately and consciously stimulate a chronic feeling of discontent. Okay, are we billions or millions? Okay, how many billions? No, okay, someone always goes over the top. It's half that, but no, it is. Like, even 1 billion is extraordinary. $250 billion a year, in excess of that, they spend every year to consciously stimulate a state of discontentment. Is it working, brothers and sisters? I believe it is. And Paul's admonition now to be content, it doesn't even register. With what? Food and raiment. And I think, yeah, right. I can't live with that. And brothers and sisters, it's so true. At first, the lying was subtle of the advertised. You know, if people would advertise a better form of, I shouldn't even say it, toilet paper. But what they advertise are things we don't even need, things we just want. Because if we needed it, they wouldn't have to advertise it. We'd know we needed it. And at first, as we said, it was subtle. But incrementally, it becomes more blatant. And it becomes wrapped in sexual innuendo and visual entertainment. And we all sit riveted. I'll show you something. Now, this here, see that there? This, brothers, this is for the sisters. This is just out of just a girly magazine, a House and Garden magazine, which is lying around in my house at home. So this is not the men's mags like the cars and the boats and the motorcycles and so forth. This is just a men's magazine. I was flicking through this. This is what's working on your minds when you read these type of magazines. Does anybody see anything wrong with that advert there? Yeah? What can you see? Can you see that there? Yeah, what about that? Think that's an accident, brothers and sisters? What about that? How terrible is that? That font has not just evolved accidentally from primordial soup like that. That has been deliberately put there to work on your mind. Now, I hate it, brothers and sisters, because all that surrounds us, the sun, the surf, the sky, picnics, lunches and friends, which once was attached to everything that God has given us. When we were at the beach, we used to think of God. When we're at the beach having a picnic, we used to think of the Father and the kingdom. Now that's not the case, because advertisements worked on us in such a way that it's worked up all our basic lusts and our states so that we think of pizza and Coke. And when you're in a heightened state, you'll do anything. And if they can give you enough scope when you've got money and the wallet's open, well, hopefully they'll put their name at the top of the list and you'll spend money on them first. And this is how it works, brothers and sisters. So you finish reading these magazines and you just feel discontented. And you can't even articulate the feeling that it gives you. Here's another one. Here's one for the fellas. This is a can of deodorant. Now that there... This one just here is shower gel. So it says, here's the equation. If you shower with Lynx, I think you call this Axe over here in America. In Australia, it's Lynx, so Axe, okay? If you shower with Axe plus use the deodorant equals girls squared. And you laugh at that, brothers and sisters. Do you know when they brought out this lascivious campaign? Within 3 weeks, they secured another 20% of the market share. So people, we laugh and we poke fun at it, and then we get in our cars, drive down to Woolworths, and we buy a can of Axe. We sit riveted. So if you're feeling discontented, brothers and sisters, any one of this stuff works on us all the time. Here's another one. It's getting so bad now that the product they sell is meant to identify you, take your identity. Without the product, you don't have any identity. Look at this one and see what you think. iPod. The person is completely a shadow. The only thing that's in colour there is the iPod itself. That's the only thing that gives this person an identity. So you better have iPod, or you better have this type of phone, or this house, or live in this area, whatever it is. Can you see how that works? It's really scary, because unless you even look at it in detail, we become just victims of our culture, just taken along by the stream. And somehow we've got to fight it, brothers and sisters, because it's toxic. So Lot had it bad. I've got it bad because Lot is me. Now, discontentment, brothers and sisters, is going to destroy our peace. It'll poison our relationships, ruin our witness to God, take away all our joy. And you think how much we must dishonor our Heavenly Father when we preach a God that satisfies and we go around discontented. Oh, it makes me feel just wretched thinking about that. I'm preaching a God that satisfies. Contentment is a good friend, brothers and sisters. We should make friends with contentment. He will hand us, or she will hand us, rest and freedom and gratitude and peace. And you'll just feel like you've got room to give and hospitality, and the planets will just align. It's a choice to make. I'm going to be satisfied with God and what He's given to me. And it's a secret that needs teaching, because God warns about it so much in His Bible, in the Word, that we actually don't believe it. We actually don't believe that the money, by the way, won't buy us happiness. Now, that's something you might want to find out for yourselves, but I want to tell you in advance it can't. You know what money can buy? Money buys us thrills, food, shelter, excitement, experiences, things like that, doesn't it? But it doesn't buy us reconciliation. It doesn't buy us any of the long-term deeper needs that we need, like love and relationships and truth. Money can't buy you a place like this here at Idlewild, brothers and sisters. It can't. You can turn up to Idlewild discontented and the whole week will sail past you and you won't even feel a thing. The relationships and the redemption and the reconciliation that we all need is something that nothing in this world can give except for that book there, that scripture. Now that's important. Now this is a hoax which is being felt everywhere, and it's a short-term deception. And it's hard for us to understand because the Bible, what I mean is, it's hard for us to understand, which is why the Bible spends so much time telling us how much we need God and He will give us true satisfaction and fulfillment. People think, oh no, if I can just have this, I'll be happy. Do you know, brothers and sisters, today, the richest of us in society are actually experiencing the same loneliness and hopelessness and depression and suicide as the poor and middle class. Exactly the same. The poor people in the world say, well, any wonder I feel depressed. I've got no money, man. What do you expect? And the middle class are deceived too, because they think they're on the threshold of greatness. That's us. If I can just claw my way over that line, I'll make it. But you see, the rich brothers and sisters, they've run the rainbow all the way out to the end, and they've found it an unexpectedly an empty journey. I mean, what's happening? They've inherited all these lies, and what they thought they were going to have and be given, nothing, just ashes in their mouth. We've got to learn the secret of contentment. And millions are discovering that they can't find contentment in important jobs and the advertised contentment of cars and houses and wardrobes. It's just a short-term hoax. I could tell you a few other funny stories of what... I might tell you one then. Do you mind if I tell you one? Okay. You're feeling depressed, so you go and see a psychologist. What's your problem? I'm depressed. Well, why don't you go and spend some? I've got no money. Well, what we'll do, go and get a few credit cards, okay? Because you can get credit cards with no money. Get a $2,000 credit card here, another $2,000 credit card here. Get four or five of those and go out, retail therapy, they actually do this, and have a day just spending hedonistically as much as you can. Go out and have a wow of a time. Kick up your heels. Spend, and just get on that real high of excitement. And then when you get home, you'll feel so much better. What do I do then? I've got all this, I owe all this money. No, send it all back. You just need to feel good again. And they're actually telling people to go and do this, not aware of the fact of how toxic it is. That's not a tonic. It's not going to help you. These people are going to end up, by the time they send it all back, deeper in the hole than when they began. But this is what the world will tell us. More and more of everything, faster and faster, is better. That's the only way to get content. More and more of everything, faster and faster. And I think somehow, brothers and sisters, we might be buying into it ourselves, particularly as Christadelphians, because the world has all their life to get rich and they can plan it all out. But you know what our problem is? We believe we're in the last days and we think Christ is going to return. And if I don't get it now, I'll miss out. And our brains actually think about that. In Australia, I don't know if you have it over here, but we have competitions, say, at a supermarket where you can win a competition where you have a trolley or a shopping cart and you get to have a whole minute where you can just rampage through the shopping centre and whatever you can get into that shopping cart is yours to keep. You've got a whole minute to do it. And I remember watching on TV once this tubby old lady had actually won the competition and she was there with four or five shopping trolleys. And she was charging through the aisles in that minute. Her arm was out like a boom gate, just wiping off everything off the shelves. She didn't care what was in the trolley, as long as it was full. And I think sometimes, am I like that? Am I just running through life, not really caring what I've got, but as long as I've got a measure of satisfaction and I'm looking in the wrong area? We've got to ask ourselves, do we want those problems? Did Lot wake up? I'll just read this to you. You don't have to turn there. We know the quote in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Did Lot wake up one morning and say to himself, I want to fall into temptation and I want to plunge myself into a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts and I want to become drowned in destruction and perdition. And I know the love of money is the root of all evil, but I'm going to covet after it. I'm going to err from the faith, lose everything and pierce myself through with many sorrows. Did Lot wake up one day and say that? I don't think so. Nobody does. But through the choices of life, brothers and sisters, these are some of the things that will come upon us. Now, brothers and sisters, if this wasn't in the Bible, be content, do you think anybody would be preaching it? It's like a virtue without a voice, isn't it? Who wants to hear it? Who wants to read about it? If it wasn't in the Bible, it'd probably be out of print by now. No one wants to talk about these things. Contentment does not lie in what you actually have or what is yours, but in whose you are. Is that grammatically correct? Who owns you? That should give you a measure of contentment, brothers and sisters. There's no formula for contentment today outside of the Word of God than obedience to God's process of reconciliation. Prayer, reading, and what's the other greatest thing in the world that God gives us and it doesn't cost us a cent? It's being here with you, brothers and sisters, in fellowship. And it's free. And that will give us more contentment than you can ever imagine. We'll just talk just a few steps, just in closing, of how we can cultivate some contentment in our life. We've got to set new standards. Outside and detached from the world. We've got to set new standards. Like God says, be content. Not be content if you got a nice house. If you don't live in the Philippines. If you can have what your neighbour has. God just says, be content, brothers and sisters. Never allow the affairs of other people to distract you. And two, think about this. Lower our expectations. Look, stop reading the glossy magazines. This is for men as well. Stop looking at what we can get with the extra money that we're getting from the overtime that we're doing. Because it's subconsciously and unconsciously affecting us with all the embedded commands more than we can ever analyze. If you're feeling discontented, any wonder? We live in this world, and I know this is the world we all swim in. Lot chose to go there. And we'll talk about this choice in relation to us later in another class. And if I said to you, like, expectations are really bad, because it is true with a measure of better technology today, that life is going to be easier to live. We'll have air conditioning. We'll have more comfortable seats, more comfortable clothing. It's easier to wash. The poor women don't go down to the river anymore and beat the stains out of the clothes, do they? Whack it in the washing machine and walk away. So technology has alleviated us in measure. But if we expect life to be better, expectations can kill us, brothers and sisters. If I came to Idlewild and I expected this place to be a five-star resort, I'd just be in tears every morning. No, I don't want you to think that I'm not doing well up there in that hut. I feel embarrassed about how good that is. Here I am talking to you, brothers and sisters, about contentment, and I'm living up there in that little palatial residence. I feel really bad. But I want you all to imagine how hard Brother Matt's doing it this week, okay? But if I said I'll give you, if you expected one car, just one car, and I gave you two, you'd be ecstatic. But if you expected three cars, and I gave you two, you're crushed. And yet, you received two cars. The emotional state was completely wrong. It was the opposite. The only difference was the expectation. Our expectations, brothers and sisters, in life can kill us. We expect our children to do so well. We expect them to make us proud. We expect God to give us this, and we expect God to give us that. All we can expect, brothers and sisters, is that God loves us more than anything in the world, and he's doing absolutely everything he can at all times to get us to the kingdom, through thick and thin, and through bad circumstances, and through good. And God says to us, on your best days, I'll give you great joy. And on your worst days, I'll get you through it every time. I will always get you through it. They have exciting, happy times in the world, and we have exciting, happy times in the truth. The only difference is theirs won't last and ours will. They have crushing, demoralizing, depressing times in the world, and sometimes we have crushing, demoralizing, depressing times in the truth, brothers and sisters. But we got God on our side. We've got to lower our expectations a little bit. We've been reconciled to God and his Son. Look down the ladder a little bit. Go and do some mission work. If you've been thinking, should I go and do something with my family? Yes, go and do it. Your wife will love you for it. Your kids will have the best time ever. You'll go and give to the people in those countries. They'll thank you so much for coming and saying, you know, Brother Mao, thank you so much for what you have done for us. And with tears in your eyes, you'll have to turn away because you can't explain to them how much they've done for you. You can hardly put that into words, what you learn and what they give to you, just going and helping them there. Look down the ladder a little bit, brothers and sisters. I love this one, develop the thank you habit. It's a word which is almost extinct, isn't it? Thank you. We should say thank you 50 times a day. You should say thank you 50 times before you even leave the house in the morning. You get up in the morning, you thank your wife just for being there. Give her a hug and say, thank you for being my wife. Or the opposite. Thank you for breakfast. Thank you for this house, God. Thank you, God, for another day. Every morning you should get up and say, I love you, God. I love the Lord Jesus Christ. I love my brothers and sisters. I love living in these last days and the fact that I can contribute in some way. Saying those things, brothers and sisters, are going to make you feel so much better with yourself. Say thank you. Get the thank you habit. Walk around thankful. By the way, what does thankfulness do? What does saying thank you help you to focus on? Sorry, I'm really bad, eh? Yeah, others. Your gratitude. Doesn't it help you to focus on the things that you have? And doesn't it eliminate the things you don't have? Just by saying thank you, all of a sudden your attention just goes zhunk onto what God has given you. You have your health. Or if you don't have health, you have the truth. And you have family. And you have relatives. You have brothers and sisters. When you don't say thank you, it's funny how the focus manages to turn around onto the things that we don't have. And then we see more, we want more, we spend more, and then we owe more. Doesn't that happen so often? And if you still don't feel good, brothers and sisters, argue with yourself. Don't accept your emotions. Don't just say, well, I feel discontented, and therefore I must be. Slap yourself. Slap your emotions in the face and say, no, I'm not putting up with that. No way in the world. I am contented because of this reason and that reason and this. And argue with your emotions until you feel better. Go visit somebody, ring somebody up, send an email, book that ticket to the mission fields. Just do it. Don't be contented to accept your emotions, because emotions lie to us so often. Practice saying thank you. Now, brothers and sisters, learn to argue with yourself. We look at the life of Lot, and we'll get right into it tomorrow with all the things that he did and said. But you know who Lot argued with too much? He argued with others. He argued with Abraham. He didn't argue enough with himself. Do you find that in ecclesial life? How often we have strife in ecclesial life and we argue with one another, and we spend not enough time arguing with number one here, with myself, telling myself of all the benefits and advantages I have just because I know you, brothers and sisters, just because I'm in the truth. Now, that's a powerful thing. So, brothers and sisters, cultivate contentment. Make friends with contentment. It's a good friend to have by your side.